Welcome to Bloomberg Philanthropies Follow the Data, our podcast about how we're driving change and making an impact in the areas of education, the arts, the environment, public health, and government innovation. I'm your host, Catherine Oliver. Here's how our podcast works. Our founder, Mike Bloomberg, is a strong believer that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Data-driven strategies are at the core of Bloomberg Philanthropies' work. So to that theme, we'll start every episode with a key data point that gives insight into a challenge we're addressing through Bloomberg Philanthropies' unique approach. From there, our guests will share how our work and the work of our partners impacts the data. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how our Bloomberg Connects partner, the Brooklyn Museum, is transforming the visitor experience through technology. Our data point today is from the National Endowment for the Arts 2012 Survey of Public Participation in the Arts. More than 70% of adults nationwide consume culture through electronic media, and of those, nearly 40% use handheld mobile devices to do so. Now, think about the last time you were in a museum. Did you take out your phone and take a picture, Google an artist, or perhaps download the museum's app? Chances are, you probably did. Today, the way we experience museums and the way we consume art and culture have been completely redefined by sophisticated technology. Through our Bloomberg Connects initiative, we've developed digital programs to help expand art access through technology at 15 museums and cultural institutions around the world, including the Brooklyn Museum. Now, to tell us more about how the museum puts people first when it comes to creating a meaningful digital experience, we welcome Kate Levin, the Arts Program Lead at Bloomberg Philanthropies, and Shelley Bernstein, the Vice Director of Digital Engagement and Technology at the Brooklyn Museum.
Hi, Shelley. Thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to talking about the amazing digital technology that we have had the pleasure of working with you and your colleagues at the Brooklyn Museum on for the past couple of years. This is called the Ask app. And can you tell us a little bit about it, what it is, and how you all came up with this super interesting idea?
Sure. Ask is a fairly simple concept. It's just an application that's available on iOS and Android, and it lets you chat in real time with people who are there as experts to help you through your visit. So you can look at a work of art, you can send a photo, ask a question, they answer you right away while you're at the Brooklyn Museum.
So some people would say, does this interrupt your opportunity to experience the art? Why did you all think this would be helpful to visitors?
We did a lot of pilot testing when we were trying to figure out what to build. And one of the things that we wanted to create was something that got people looking at art more closely and sort of got them out of the screens. We see that every day that people are sort of buried in their screens. And, you know, when you come into a museum, you have some of the most beautiful things on display. And it's a missed opportunity if you're not looking at them. So one of the things that we did in early pilot testing is we said, okay, maybe we can think about this as a way to direct people back up to works of art. And what we started to see in these early pilots was people would come back and they would tell us. We would have our chief curator being the brain, and he would answer questions. And we would send people out with iMessage to talk to our chief curator. And what they would come back to us and say, and we were actually seeing this in the user behavior during testing, is that they said, we were looking at art more closely to try and figure out what questions to ask about it. And we would see people looking up completely buried in the work of art, and their phones would be to their side. Meanwhile, Kevin would be on his computer, completely buried in his computer, trying to answer these questions. And we realized that we had this very compelling model after that, is they still felt like it was a personal exchange, even though there was a device brokering this conversation between two people.
So part of the reason that Mike Bloomberg has been funding in this area comes from his sense that he in the past has had experiences of a highly privileged introduction to a museum exhibition by having a curator sort of standing over his shoulder. So starting in the 90s, he would fund acoustic guides at museums. And part of the Bloomberg Connects program that Brooklyn Museum is part of is all about figuring out the next digital iteration of that. It sounds like part of what you were going for was creating that personal curator for everybody. But part of what I'm wondering about is how did you even, in the way back machine, how did you even have the insight that that's what people might want?
We had no idea. In fact, in the early meetings that we had at the museum, we would sit down with a lot of staff from all across the departments, and people had a really good handle on what we did well, and they had a really good handle on what we didn't do well, and they had some ideas about what they thought this could be, but then when you asked a little bit deeper, they didn't have a sense of what was happening on the floor of the museum. And the very first pilot that we did, we put 20 people out onto the floor in stealth. And what they were trying to define was what was happening at the museum and where it was happening. So at the end of that pilot, what they came back to us and said was, first of all, your visitors are very, very talkative. We see that all over the place, and it's not something that we see everywhere. And the second thing is they seem to be... there are certain areas in the museum that seem more chatty than others. So in our second pilot, we built on that and we said, okay, let's take those same 20 people. This time, let's identify them as gallery hosts and let's put them in the chatty areas where we know people want to talk and see what happens. During that pilot, they came back to us and they said, wow, people are flocking to us. Like, they will just gravitate toward us and they want to talk and they want to talk about art. And they're having 5-minute conversations. So what we heard at the end of that pilot was they really wanted recommendations. They wanted to know what to see next. So the next pilot became testing that idea. And that idea was our biggest failure. But we learned so much from it. We put those hosts out, this time in front of specific works of art. People would come up to them, they would talk about that work of art, and they would say, hey, you know, our curator thinks that you might be interested in this because we've had this conversation about this work. And people in Brooklyn, absolutely, they hated this idea. They would ask, why? Why is this important to me? So at the end of the day, what we knew is they wanted a personal experience, right? And they wanted a dynamic experience. They didn't want anything that was predetermined or canned. So we started to wonder, okay, if we put tech in between that, because we have a scaling problem, that building is 500,000 square feet. It's enormous. We can't possibly staff it in the way that we would need to have a presence everywhere. Instead, let's congregate the team behind a device and allow people to ask questions wherever they happen to be in the museum.
So it sounds like part of the way you got to the set of issues you focused on is almost a behaviorist experimental track. What in your background enabled you to figure out how to do that?
There's nothing specific in my background. I think if you look back at all of the sort of previous technology projects that we had done, we were very interested in things like how user behavior changes an actual project. So for instance, Click was this very early project where we were crowdsourcing photography. And the whole project was about how experts viewed art versus non-experts. In a second project, we were looking at Malcolm Gladwell's theory in his book Blink, where in the blink of an eye, you're presented with a lot of choices. So what are you looking at? And it occurred to us in the museum, what are you looking at when you step into a gallery? Where do your eyes go? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? So we developed online a test with our Indian paintings where you could look at our Indian paintings in a split second, decide which one within 4 seconds you felt drawn to, and then we would give you interpretation, labels, tags, short form, long form, to try and test your perception around those objects and if it changed. So a lot of the projects that we were thinking about just very early on had to do with people and how people changed sort of the nature of technology, the nature of the web, what people brought to that equation as being really sort of pivotal.
Part of your reputation, which is deservedly growing by leaps and bounds, is that you are incredibly respectful of and intuitive about the role of people in looking at things. How has the actual people use of ASK as it rolls out fed back into your development of the app?
Yeah, it's funny. The app, you know, has been on the floor now for about a year in iOS, and the app itself has not changed much at all. But what has changed around it is the museum. So what happens after you have a conversation in our app is we take all the questions that you've asked, all the answers that we've given you, and we break those down into snippets of conversation. We tag them with object IDs. That goes to our curators who look at that to try and determine what's happening through this app. We had a director change in the middle of it. And when Ann Pasternak came on board, one of the first things she said is, I want to rethink our Egyptian, our American, and our European galleries. I was sitting in a meeting with our American curator, Connie Choi, and I said, Connie, what are you learning from this data? And she turned around and she absolutely floored me. She said, well, what I'm learning is that visitors are not making connections between objects, no matter how we've thought about those connections in the galleries. And it blew me away. In our next meeting, we were sitting with Rich Ast, who was re-envisioning the European galleries, and he had his own learnings. And he said, well, what we're really going to be working on is connections between objects. And I raised my hand and said, hey, Rich, have you talked to Connie? And he said, no. I said, well, you know, she learned this from the data. And if you're working on connections, you might want to talk. And when you now step down into the European galleries, you can't miss the connections because they've taken a lot of work away from the walls and just focused on these connected objects. And you can't miss it as a user experience. So I sort of look at the last year and I think, wow, this is this very simple idea. And I think as a visitor, you have no idea that your conversations are being sort of analyzed and looked at and thought about. But the potential is that we're changing the visitor experience for the better for every single user who comes in the door. And I find that really inspiring because it's about listening to audiences in this very unique way. And not just saying, hey, it's the data, we're just going to follow the data, but it's taking the data and really thinking about it and thinking about the curatorial vision and how we can help that.
Well, just pause for a moment to take some credit for the fact that you have been beta-ing this item for as long as you have, because I do think, you know, that shows a real commitment to getting it right rather than just getting it out there in yeah. front of folks. And, you know, your big press launch has just happened. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, there's a lot to be said about reflecting institutional commitment to your users by spending this much time in trying to figure it out. But, you know, one of the interesting facts that started to emerge is that 70% of Americans apparently consume media now via some kind of digital interface. And, you know, a lot of that's television, but apparently just about 40% are now doing it through handheld devices. What do you make of the fact that you've been able to get curators to think about the visitor experience in such a receptive way? Because frankly, a lot of institutions, that's a much tougher sell.
You know, I think the key to it was stepping back from interpreting the data myself. So we've had, you know, 4,000 conversations over the last year and 2,800 snippets have been identified with objects, and we're handing 100-page reports to curators who are reviewing it. They have this vested interest in wanting the ASK team to answer questions well, and in ways that they would if they were there. Going back to that story about Mike Bloomberg, this really is about having someone there who can represent that curatorial vision, even when the curator can't be there themselves.
When I took a tour using ASK recently, one of the things I was struck by was the tone of the answers. I had queried why in a portrait of Emily Roebling she was only wearing one glove. And the response was that she was being presented to the Queen, and you had to do that with a bare hand, so that, you know, it was a very symbolic moment, and it wasn't that, like, she was a goofball and forgot her glove. But the way the answer was delivered struck me as being really poised at the point of being accessible without being condescending. Mm-hmm. How much, you know, of a struggle was that for you to fight for? I mean, one of the cops about curatorial writing or art historical criticism is that it can be pretty dense to understand. On the other hand, you know, no one likes being talked down to.
A big part of that was in hiring the ASK team. We've hired a group of people who are both art historians in their own right, but all of them have an education part in their background. So they were coming from these sort of two sides of the coin. Combined with working with curators, not on a level of how do we say this, it's more about how do we conceptually talk about this. Once they have the concepts down, they can talk in their own style. During our early testing phases, when the app was on the floor, we were invited to Bloomberg. And one of the things that the ASK team still talks about this visit to this day, because one of the things that they were told is that we never cut and paste answers. No matter what, the service team there thinks about personalizing responses, even if it takes longer. And the ASK team took that to heart. And even though they have snippets of conversation there, they're actually very concerned about the voice that they're using, the relationship that they're building. And it was one of those really valuable lessons that we learned very early on.
Taking a step back, what then, it sounds like you have some pretty clear internalized criteria for what you think a good digital experience should be. And again, if you're talking about a population of, you know, 40% of Americans who are getting things on a handheld, mm-hmm. what in your view makes up a good digital experience versus a not good one?
I think a good digital experience is one where you're focused on what's in the room and less about the device, or the device is helping guide you in that. We just did a site visit to the Museum of Natural History to look at the reboot of Explorer. And one of the things that we saw in their content is they've done these amazing call-outs where they do these visual animations in the images that you're looking at because they want to point out something specific that your eyes are then directed to outside of the screen. And I think any time we're doing that as professionals and thinking less about, you know, you think about the pen, right, at the Cooper Hewitt. The amazing thing about that is you're not ever looking at anything. You're simply going around and using this thing, but you're looking at all of these works on view that you're collecting.
Sounds to me like what you're talking about is the need to think about the digital device as a delivery tool, but one that should never supersede the authenticness of the experience that you're trying to deliver.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. So what are other institutions doing that you find interesting? You've mentioned natural history, you've mentioned Cooper Hewitt, both in the cultural field and, you know, beyond.
One is, if you remember, Paul Ramirez-Jones' Key to the City project, which was a Creative Time project, ironically enough. And what I learned from that, in that project, you got a passport and you were invited to go throughout the city to see these different sites and experience these different sites. And you got a physical key to the city. It was an actual key. There was nothing digital about this project at all. But what I realized as I was doing it is the bar was set really high to participate in this. You had to go to Times Square to get the thing to start the project. You then had to go to all the boroughs to experience far off places. I mean, far places that you would never go. But as an experience, because the bar was set so high, you engaged with that project so deeply. And I would watch other people engage with that project, and you would get to these sites, and people would leave little notes at each site, and they would say, if you haven't done this, you gotta go do that. And when you think about the projects that I've done, we're always trying to raise that bar, right? We're always asking a question is the hardest thing you can ask someone to do, right? If you think about digital today is about a like button. What's the easiest thing to do? If you talk to web designers, they'll say, oh, you got to make it easy. I'm actually, I have the opposite point of view. I think you should make it as hard as you can make it, because the harder you make it, the more engaged users are when they do it. So for instance, in Ask, what we see is that conversations last 13 messages long. That's pretty long for a text exchange. What we see is that 20% of our users are asking questions in 6 or more galleries, that they're returning, that some of these conversations last the entire duration of a 3-hour visit. And that's the kind of engagement that I find inspiring. And I think when I look at projects, what I'm looking for are a certain complexity of the project, digital or not, that sort of focuses you and brings you into the project in a way that is very unique.
I love that you enjoyed Key to the City, because that was something that the Bloomberg administration actually worked very hard on. We did almost 500 temporary public art projects while Mike was mayor. And that one, of course, getting that real estate in Times Square was dependent on the city, and working with the artist and working with Creative Time, making sure that a lot of boroughs were covered, and that, as you say, that level of complexity, I think that was very much the artist's intention. I'm glad it came through to you. But what I also hear you saying in part is that if you create a robust enough experience, people want the real thing. Because that's another potential form of paranoia in the cultural world about digital, is that it will replace the real thing as opposed to make people find the real thing more compelling. Do you have a point of view about that?
I do. I think that the best experience, I think the best projects are the ones that think about experience on site as being primary. And if you do that one thing well, that many other things sort of come from it. But when I think about the pen, that is an experience that you only have at the Cooper Hewitt. And that's phenomenal. When Ask, it shuts off when you leave the building. You can't ask questions from your home. You have to be at the museum experiencing our works of art in order for that to work. And when I see those experiences, I think what happens is it drives audiences to come in, to have an experience at the physical place. And you should always have an online strategy, and that online digital strategy should always be mobile today. But there's a difference in that sort of on-site experience and how we think about those on-site experiences. I think about the sort of revolutionary, the Guggenheim Museum with the sort of refactoring with the Near Me feature suddenly takes something that you could use off-site, and you still can, which is great, but totally refactors it to an in-person experience that you are not going to get outside. And that's the sticky bit that I think is really interesting.
So this field is, of course, incredibly lucky to have you want to continue working in cultural, and your next step is going to be heading to the Barnes Collection. Can you talk a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish there, but more than that, how you see yourself as a leader in this field?
Sure. The Barnes was such a unique opportunity for me, because they're thinking about the end-to-end visitor experience there. So they've positioned me and the organization to be thinking about what happens before you come to the museum, your on-site visitor experience, which digital may be a part of, but then also what happens after you leave. And as a technologist, the most compelling thing about that formula is that nothing can change at the Barnes. You've got these walls with no interpretation, right? It is an experience in itself.
And just to remind folks, nothing can change at the Barnes, because that was the way his will was constructed, and the work has to be shown in certain groupings and in certain combinations that are very specific.
So how you take that and think about repeat visitation, and think about relationship building, and think about getting information to people, that's an experience that is so specific. And I think the answer is not necessarily going to be screens in the same way that you can do at other organizations. So as a technologist, I sort of see all of the puzzle there And I get very, very excited about it. Not to mention that it's one of, the collection alone is sort of awe-inspiring to be around.
Well, I think this field is extraordinarily lucky to have someone as awe-inspiring as you are in it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for in this episode of Follow the Data. Thank you for listening and sharing in our mission at Bloomberg Philanthropies. Please follow us on Twitter at Bloomberg.org. That's Bloomberg, D-O-T-O-R-G, for information on our next episode. As our founder, Mike Bloomberg, says, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Until next time, keep following the data. Special thanks to producers and editors Ivy Lee and Lindsay Firestone and music composer Mark Pirro.